Welcome to the latest episode of the HR Locker podcast. On today's show, we have our very own Adam Coleman, CEO of HR Locker. HR Locker has grown into a thriving business over the last number of years. And Adam acknowledges that instilling a great work culture has played a very strong role in the ongoing success of the company. Our core message this year was placing people at the center of everything we do. A message that permeates throughout our whole organization, from the professional growth of our employees, right down to the development of the features in the product. Adam was recently asked to speak at a conference about the future of work, and we asked him to break it down for us. And although the future of work is a very broad topic, we asked him to give us some takeaway insights on what a company like HR Locker has done in order to maintain a productive and happy workforce.
Today we have with us Adam Coleman, CEO, and we'll be talking about the future of work and the digitization of the workforce. So a little bit strange for me today. I've been working with Adam for some time, I think the last 13 years. And one of the things, so recently you spoke at the Workforce Excellence Conference about future disruptions in the workforce. What do you think will be the biggest disruptors for the future of work?
Wow, it's a huge question. And I think I discussed it at the last talk I gave. For the next year, for mid-sized companies, we'll say 250 employees downwards, down to like 15, right up to probably 500. I can say the obvious and talk about COVID-19, but that is the normal now. It's here. We don't know when it's going away. So as far as I'm concerned, it's no longer a disruptor. It's here. Okay. The major disruptor for the workplace in the next year. And the hardest part for will be the onboarding and the offboarding of remote workers or workers in general. The main reason for this is that traditionally people could, they went through induction programs, they would have week-long, two-week, even months-long, getting to know products and people in organizations. And to do that in a remote way, and to do it well in a remote way, requires a serious amount of thought and a serious amount of planning, and you have to put the empathy in you have to place empathy in everything that you do on that one, because it's really bringing somebody into a situation which they haven't ever experienced before. They always want to put their best foot forward because they're new, and it's going to be extremely challenging to do it really well.
Yeah, and I'd agree. I think as a company, we're very focused on company culture. Mm-hmm. And it's taken a long time for us to create that company culture. We've always had a mixture of remote workers as well as dual workers, as well as full-time office employees. I suppose I've been reading a lot of things over the last while talking about companies are really struggling to be able to migrate their culture from an office-based culture into a remote workplace culture. So for those companies who are, I suppose, struggling to see how they can disperse their culture into a remote workforce, what do you think are the best ways to do that?
We need to put empathy, time, and active listening in the forefront of our minds when we're trying to create, maintain, or operate a really good culture.
I suppose 6 months ago, we all thought that we would return to normal life, mm-hmm. and that COVID would be here for a few weeks. But with no signs, I suppose, of restrictions lifting or, life going back to 100% normal in regards to the workplace, for companies who are going to have some sort of remote working for the next 12 months, whether mm-hmm. it is a combination of employees working full-time at home or 1 or 2 days in the office, what can companies do really to make sure that their culture is still focusing on employee well-being and employee wellness?
So, because we're it's constantly changing from, oh, we can all come back into the office, or we can't, or we're hybrid. The first thing we have to do is we have to ask people, and you have to actively listen to what they're saying. When we were scheduling or talking about scheduling people back into the office, we decided to ask them what did they want? What way did they want to have it? How could they be most productive? And more importantly, how could they be most happy in doing their job? Mm-hmm. Extroverted people, most of the extroverts all want to come back at least a couple of days a week. One or two of the introverts don't want to come back at all. And there's an argument for both. And why can't we have both?
Yeah. We recently had Trish McDonald, and she was talking about wellness. And it was really in the time of the first few weeks when everybody was remote working. And even ourselves in HR Locker, we were doing online yoga. We were having online drinks. We were having, and mm-hmm. we were really obsessed with still kind of having that one-on-one time with everybody. Do you think that's going to continue with the online yoga classes and things like that in terms of a company's doing that? Or
I think it has to.
Yeah.
I think it really has to. And I think companies will have to make more of an effort to include everybody. And that's where the trouble is going to be. Because, if you have some people who are, we'll say, active, so, yeah, let's all go team building, and some people, I'm not really up to that, or don't really like to do
that. I'm always happy to go for a team building.
Yeah. So you have to take everyone's situation into consideration, which will make it way more difficult. Even when we were discussing earlier on today as part of our management meeting, it was like our offsite. We have a quarterly offsite. I know there's two people, particularly our commercial director, Richard, who would love to get everybody in a room and mm-hmm. great fun and whatever, but we can't. And it's not, even if we wanted to, the government guidelines, be it in Ireland or the UK, are saying, no, don't do it.
I think you're right in regards to the biggest disruptors being legislation. And it's really because we don't know if you're looking at the UK, that pubs are not closing at 10, they have a curfew of 10 o'clock. It's something that we can't plan for.
That's a furious disruptor for the pub industry.
Exactly.
And like every industry sector role and the stage of, bring it down to the individual, the stage you're at in your career will all have different ramifications. Like if you take somebody who's got three children living in London, both partners working, and all of a sudden now it's the companies that they work for have said you can work from home. Now they can decide to buy a house in Dorset.
Yeah.
They can change their lifestyles completely, which is fantastic for them. But on the other hand, if I'm a graduate and I've just started in the organization, I'm not getting the same feel for the company. Mm. I'm not generating that buy-in. There isn't those
networking opportunities.
There's no impromptu nights out. Yeah. So the way that they will view work is very, very different. And that's why I bring it back to the onboarding of remote workers. You're going to get the ones who are euphoric about it, who will say, great, it's great to work from home. I don't have to do a two-hour commute anymore. I can spend more time with my family. I can get up early in the morning and do yoga, as you just described earlier, Christelle. But then you get the younger people that are going, okay, when do I meet my colleagues? When do I feel part of this organization? So trying to help people be part of your culture and your organization requires, and I keep coming back to it, empathy, time, and active listening to what they want.
Yeah, and you spoke earlier about, you mentioned introverted and extroverted, and in our own company, obviously we're doing everything through Teams calls or virtual meetings. Mm-hmm. We used to be Microsoft Teams here. And we have seen a difference in regards to who has their camera off and their camera on. And we had Deanna O'Connor on, and she was talking about basically the etiquette in terms of when you're hosting an online meeting. Mm-hmm. And I definitely think it's something that companies will have to make sure that they're not leaving people out, but also as an employee, you need to be able to take that ownership.
Yeah, there's a pure etiquette. It doesn't make any difference whether you're face-to-face with somebody mm-hmm. or whether you're on a camera. So if you're on a camera with somebody and you're on a Zoom call, a Teams call, or whatever call, once it's camera-related, You have to see the camera is the eyes of the people. So most people have two screens open. You have to concentrate on the camera. Otherwise, people will feel that you're disinterested, etc. Now, extroverted people with extroverted preferences are more likely to get involved like that. Introverted people are more preference. People with an introverted preference are more likely not to look at the camera or not even leave the camera on. So I think companies have to build policies, procedures, and best practice of how to conduct Teams calls. Because I think it's very, very important. It gets trickier then when you're actually talking to people outside of your organization.
Yeah.
But if you ask somebody to turn on their camera and they don't, what can you do?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely find even, you know, if you're on a call with five people and one person doesn't have their camera on,
Definitely imbalances the call.
You're not naturally going to engage with the person who doesn't have their camera on.
We made a decision very early on because HR Locker very much gone the hybrid route where, you know, we all work from home and then we schedule ourselves in the office when we need to. But even if there's three people in the office and there's two people at home, everybody on the call, on a Teams call or in a meeting, all have to dial in from their PC because my younger daughter and younger son brought this topic up, which is called FOMO. It's fear of missing out. And if I'm looking into a camera and I can see three people dialed in from the one PC, fear of missing out does come into it for sure.
Because you're missing that sidebar, aren't you?
You
can't see that change of expression or that eye contact. If you're on the screen, you're being left out.
Exactly. And so what we have, we made a rule in here, not so much a policy, but a rule that if there's a call going on and there's two people in the office and one person at home, everybody has to dial in from their PC.
Yeah.
Because you have to create a level playing field.
Yeah, and I think it works for us as well. You know, it's just something we do. And I actually think that it's allowed our 100% remote workers not to feel isolated because everybody's dialing in. Everybody's at the same, no one's on the back foot.
Exactly. We went even one step further, Christelle, as you know, that every person within HR Locker has the same desk as they have in the office.
Yeah.
They all have their risers. They all have their same equipment. So they don't feel any way disenfranchised if they are working from home or they're working in the office. So you have to create a new normal in terms of office equipment.
And a fine for saying the new normal.
Exactly, absolutely.
So with, you know, everyone's talking about the new digitization of the workforce, you know, it's this new term that we hopefully will be fined for that people are gonna be saying too much. There's remote working going on, the rise of machine learning, there's AI, you know, COVID is not the only thing that's disrupting the workforce. But if we're talking about getting our training needs analysis ready for, you know, if companies are talking about getting their training needs analysis ready for the next 12 months, do you think there's any areas that people should be focusing on or, you know, what way should people be looking at their training needs?
I think the first thing that you need to do is you need to train people for the here and now. And the first thing that we need to do on that basis is you need to ask them. Mm-hmm. Like what we do in HR Locker is once every year, we send out a training needs analysis. It's literally, it's a classic scenario of just digitizing the mundane, where we say, we want you to tell us what training you need within the next year to be 5% better at your job. And we allow the people to come back and bring in lots of stuff. Because I don't think any one person is capable of actually figuring out what everybody wants. What you do then is once you get that back within your given time frame, we normally give 3 weeks to do it. And there's obviously, like every other organization, there's a reminder 2 days beforehand for the people who won't do it. And there's the guys who've lots of blue energy will have it done by day four. Once you get that back, you need to really look around what everybody wants to do, look at where they've come from previously, look at what realistically that your budgets can hold, and then you start having one-to-one conversations with the people to reinforce it, see that eye contact, And then you basically need to set out on a path. Once the budgets are in, but the beauty of it, I suppose, in what we do in HR Locker, and as you know, we try to put the person at the center of everything we do, it's up to the individual to drive their own career. So we give them the mechanisms to automate it and to request it. It's up to us to decide with them, and then basically it happens. And then it's scheduled out for the year. And I think that's by far the best way of doing it, purely on the basis that because there's so many disruptors, 21 disruptors is a huge amount of disruptors in any one given year. And if you have those, you have to ask the people. You have to go back to your principles in regards to how you work, and then you have to put the plan in place and execute.
I think most training at this stage, they've adapted to being online or blended, yeah, or anything like that. So I don't think it's an excuse to stop training for the next 12 months.
Under no circumstances. It's always the first thing that goes in time of recession, which in my mind is probably the biggest mistake people will make, because people still need to be trained.
Yeah.
Because even if you're in an organization that you have to lose half of your workforce, you're going to have to train that other half of your workforce to cope with the loss of the other half for a start off. And then you basically need to basically move on from that as well.
I think it's good for companies. I think training, it doesn't always have to be outside of your organization on a course. It can be mentoring, like you say, or you know, just something that maybe you can learn from somebody else in the organization.
Yeah, I think, as you're well aware, that my hobby horse and has been for years is culture. Mm-hmm. If you get people behaving in a way that has their interests at heart, has the success of the company at heart, then you know you're always going to be onto a good thing.
Yeah. Now, this is one of the biggest questions, so I do apologize. I kept it for last, just to make sure. So I mean, one of your things, and it's really one of our main centers of our culture in HR Locker, is putting the people at the center of everything we do, and that's in regards to how we operate as a company, how we build our software, just how we operate as a company. And I mean, I think our employees as a group, we feel that. So with the rise of digitization, so I mean, we're talking about automating things, we're talking about digitizing people's jobs, but you know, how can you ensure that we do all that and we don't forget the human in HR?
God, I'm beginning to sound like a broken record here, but I'll talk about three things again. I'll talk about, absolutely, if you look at the vision of what HR Locker is about as a product, even, is to make life easier for the employee and make life easier for the employer by digitizing the mundane. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's great. And that's fantastic. But the more you digitize and the more you enable or digital enable jobs, tasks, whatever, you still need to have the human at the center of it. So if you're digitizing or digitally enable somebody's parts of somebody's job, you have to show empathy to them, first off, that you're doing this because they might like that part of their job. So you have to spend time with them to describe how it will be better for them, because some people just don't like change. And then you have to actively listen to them, to what they're actually saying. And the term active listening is really, really important. And what that basically means is that you listen and you follow through to what they're saying. And I think that's probably the most important part of it, is that, you know, yes, we do put the person at the center of everything we do. Yes, we build a product that puts the control of an employee's career in their own hands within that business. In order to do that, empathy, time, active listening, and follow through are the most important parts, I think.
Perfect. So thank you very much, Adam. I hope you come and join us again for a podcast.
I will, for sure. No problem.
I hope it wasn't too bad. Thanks, Adam. And obviously, we will have all Adam's contact details as part of the podcast. But Adam, if somebody wants to get in contact with you, probably the best way through LinkedIn.
LinkedIn, or if you want to send me an email directly, it's adam@hrlocker.com.
Perfect. So thank you very much, and take care, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Check us out at hrlocker.com. The show was hosted by Christelle Wrynn and produced by Jenny Martin. Subscribe to catch the latest episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you like to get your podcasts. If you'd like to feature, get in touch by emailing us at marketing@hrlocker.com. You can also follow HR Locker on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn.